Moncrief on News Talk.
Hey, where are we with Castro? Is there any movement on that? Because, you know, everything with my father, it all comes back to Cuba. You were just saying this the other day, were you not?
Yeah, guys,
I just think that.
We got to get real here. I don't think you get what's going on here. We have to talk about your case, not about self-tanner and toupees.
See, this makes me think that you don't understand what's going on here, Mr. Shapiro, because this is 1990. It is a new era, and this case is going to be on television, which means that the number one thing that I'm concerned about is how we look on camera. Because if we look the right way, right, smart, clean cut, whole lives ahead of us, then there isn't a jury on this planet that is going to believe that we did this.
Because we didn't.
Because we didn't.
Okay. Well, let me tell you the number one thing I'm concerned about.
There you go. That's Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
So obviously, dramatization of the true story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These guys are still in prison, I think, are they?
They are in prison. Yeah. I mean, that's not a spoiler.
Yes.
They are in prison without parole. So they will, and serving two consecutive life sentences, however that works out. But yes, they will die in prison is ultimately the plan.
Yeah.
So this is part of the Ryan Murphy deal that he signed with Netflix many years ago. And it was back in an era when streamers were handing out hundreds of millions like they were sweets. And it really didn't necessarily work out that great for Netflix, because a lot of the stuff he made for them kind of bombed. And he has since actually left and gone back to Disney.
Oh,
but
okay.
Right at the end of his deal came the Jeffrey Dahmer show, which is under the same Monster umbrella. And that was an absolute massive hit, so much so that I think it's the fourth most watched show ever on Netflix globally. And into that, they thought, you know what, we'll find some other crime stories to go with. And there's already a third season about to go into production about Ed Gein. We'll find out next year.
Yeah, okay.
But this is about the Menendez brothers, who infamously shot dead very violently their two parents, Kitty and Jose Menendez, in their Beverly Hills mansion in 1989. And the whole crux of the case comes down to whether or not you believe their or anyone believes their defense, which is that they suffered years of sexual abuse at the hands of their father and abuse at the hands of their mother as well. And the prosecution would allude that they just wanted the money, of which they were spoiled brat, you know, American yuppies in the late 80s, and they just wanted to be rich, basically. And into this comes an interesting show that sort of falls apart the further you get into it, right? So, like, it doesn't do itself any favors by being very poorly compared to the O.J. Simpson one that Ryan Murphy also made, American Crime Story, which is a really brilliant and, like, better with every episode show, which is exploring the crime, but also the state of politics at the time, media relations, understanding of TV as a spectacle, all that kind of stuff, right? And their case, the Menendez brothers, it ran, you know, contemporaneously with OJ. In fact, at one point, OJ ends up in a cell beside, I want to say Eric, I think it's Eric, in prison, who's giving him advice through a wall kind of thing. But here, we just have so much to unpack, and yet it still feels incredibly long at 9 episodes, right? Like, it has proven to be very, very controversial in the sense that the Menendez brothers have publicly came out against it. The family have have complained about it. Ryan Murphy has issued a statement saying that this is the best thing that's happened to them in 30 years because it's put them back in the centre of media attention. And indeed, they have now just gotten a documentary deal with Netflix themselves.
Yeah.
So it has put it back as a talking point. But ultimately, as a viewer, I found it a frustrating experience because the show is constantly trying to have its cake and eat it too. It is sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, oh, they're bad boys. But then also literally the next second, they're the victims of the most horrendous crimes. But then a turn on a screw, actually, they're all making it up. But actually, are they, kind of thing? So the show is very comfortable to sit on the fence and yet ring moments of either extreme lying or extreme tragedy into a spectacle, which I found a bit odd the further we got into it. Then there's just a few sort of odd bits, right? So you get Ari Grainer, who plays their lawyer, Leslie Abramson. And like, we meet her right sort of at the beginning, maybe episode 2 or 3, where she comes in, she's replacing the lawyer we heard in the clip there. And she's going to break open this case, and she's a leading figure. And then she gets sidelined in the second half of the show to someone who just gets to object, object, object in court and do nothing else than that. Tonally, like what I liked about it more so than the Jeffrey Dahmer show, you know, that show, which I didn't actually care for enough to finish. This, I thought, at least had moments of levity throughout, right? Yeah. Like it's about, you know, it pokes fun at the period of time it's shot in. It definitely pokes fun at the boys and their parents to some degree, while being at times incredibly dramatic. There's a really fantastic middle episode, I think it's episode 5, The Hurt Man, which is just a two-hander, one-scene shot between Leslie Abramson, the lawyer, and Eric Menendez, played by Cooper Koch. You know, I would say quite a star-making role for him. Just, you know, one thing I think everyone can agree on with this is the acting is excellent. It's just that the plotting just gets plodding the further we get into it. Mm. And as I said, it just can't decide on what, you know, on whether they're monsters or not. And as if, like, and I'm not saying it has to, right? Like, as in, a whole point of this mystery is, did they, you know, were they the victims? Were they not? But we do know they very, very violently killed their parents, and their parents get very short shrift in their ability to defend themselves as, you know, dead people in this show. But all in, I think it's hugely popular. It is going to spark a third season, and that'll Crikey. Probably spark a fourth, because ultimately murder is easy fodder in this kind of thing.
Well, because you mentioned the O.J. Simpson drama that he did, and part of what they were looking at there was murder as spectacle, the way television treats it. Isn't Ryan Murphy now doing exactly the same thing?
I think so. I mean, this opens like, I mean, have you watched it at all?
No.
Okay. Well, like the murder scene happens very, very early on, I think, episode one. And I mean, as murder scenes go, this one is brutal, like violent shotguns, reloading, you know, shooting your mother in the face business.
Lovely.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I'm there, you know, doing Wordle at the same time.
Okay.
Right?
Inured to violence. You so, monster, James.
So like it is certainly all about spectacle, but where it sort of all pulls it back is in the quality of the acting. The two brothers, you know, I've mentioned Cooper Koch before. I'd never seen him in anything before. Nicholas Alexander Chavez, I think he's Lyle. He, I think, was like a soap actor before he was this. It is a big breakthrough moment for them because they play the characters enigmatically and truly believably. But the problem is, I don't know what to believe. Right?
Yes, yeah.
So all in, I like, at least with the Dahmer show, that was a complete story, as in we know what he did. We know he was this terrible monster. This is more conflicted. And yet, is it or isn't it? Because it's just trying to have its cake and eat it the whole time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. We'll move on to our next show. It is Midnight Family. There are new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
Has life ever been cruel enough to make you choose between two things you love? Well, that's kind of happening to me. The thing is, the rules of med school are quite clear. If you're studying medicine, you can't practice as an undergraduate. And, as you will see, that's a bit of a problem. Because, on one hand, I love school. It isn't a coincidence I'm the first Tamayo to go to college, even if it has been really hard. On the other hand, there's nothing quite like the adrenaline rush of an ambulance. In my family, we're all paramedics. I've been in an ambulance for as long as I can remember. My dad is sort of a legend in the world of bootleg ambulances. What's a bootleg ambulance, you ask?
Now, don't let the American accents fool you. This is actually set in Mexico.
Mexico City,
Mexico City.
This is the Apple-dubbed version. And they do present it originally with subtitles, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, which would you recommend?
I mean, obviously, I'd recommend the subtitled one.
Yeah, but, okay.
And in fairness to Shogun, I think that really helped move the dial a lot with kind of enjoying things in foreign languages being translated in real time. So, yeah, so this is based off a 2019 documentary that I had never heard of until I was looking at this. I named the same thing, Midnight Family, about the private ambulance industry in Mexico City. Mm. So in Mexico City, a city of 10 million people, there are only 100 ambulances run by the government, which is not enough to cater for a city of 10 million people. And that has prompted this private industry of people going out driving their own ambulances at night. I mean, it's basically like, you know, Uber for ambulances.
It's like being a taxi driver, right? Yeah.
And this drama is all about a family of ambulance drivers. So who we heard, who was dubbed in that clip is Mary Gabby, who is played by Renata Vaca. She's the wunderkind of the family who is in med school at the same time as, you know, she's studying all day in med school in Mexico City. And then at night, she's driving around with her father, Ramon. Her brother, Marcus, who's probably the best known actor in this, Diego Calva, who was in Babylon last year. And then her youngest brother, Julito, played by Sergio Bautista. And basically, it is a medical drama, but with the added intrigue of it being a group of amateur ambulance drivers running around Mexico City. Now, obviously, amateur, quote unquote, she's a med student, so she has deft medical skills and training. She's able to, you know, I don't know.
Do medical stuff, yeah.
Doctor,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, doctor stuff.
Doctor
yeah.
stuff. And into that then comes a bit of Mexican melodrama as well, right?
Yeah.
So like her father, Ramon, is dealing with a heart problem, which he's hiding from the children, while also is separated from their mother, who left a few years ago to run off and is trying to rekindle something with her. And all in, I found this a really good, meaty, exciting, fast-paced kind of medical drama. And at least a new branch of medical drama that I had never seen before, because actually I can't think of one that has followed paramedics before, yeah. Let alone amateur paramedics who are racing other paramedics to be the first on site. And then
this is literal ambulance chasing them, yeah.
And then shaking down the patients that they collect money from at the end of the service as well. So it's all about the sort of economic divide that is taking place in Mexico. The kind of Mary Gabby represents sort of both sides of it, right? These snooty doctors who look down their nose at these ambulance chasers, but also the fact that they are providing this essential service that other people would, you know, otherwise succumb to their injuries waiting for a real ambulance to come to them. And then what I also really liked about it was it explored very dynamically this totally other part of like the kind of migration crisis that I had never even really considered, because obviously we hear so much about it from the US side.
Yeah.
But obviously migrants are traveling through Mexico to get to the US. And what's it like for Mexicans dealing with that part of this migratory crisis as well? And that's sort of all played about through a character named Crisis, aptly, who is Marcus's Colombian girlfriend who wants to move to the US and take him to the US, but he doesn't know what he wants to do. So all in, it's like a meaty, funny, clever, interesting show. The special effects are a bit shoddy here and there, but like, you know what? So what? Apple is not throwing them that much money, but there's certainly a lot of heart going on here. And I'm intrigued to see where it goes, because like the next episode is all about it's sort of like taking the 2017 earthquake that killed 300 people in Mexico City, because many buildings collapsed and Mexico is one of the most densely populated and like on numerous fault lines. So they couldn't have picked a worse place to put it, to be honest with you. But like they are using these kind of real life events from day-to-day Mexican tragedies to explore how a very fraught medical industry, and one in which people are barely making ends meet, is functioning. So all in, a very intriguing medical
so
drama.
Like ER, everyone was good looking. like, is this grittier than that and looks more like real life?
I think it's gritty in the sense that, yeah, it's real life. And it's based on a real family. I mean, there's a 2019 documentary. Now, in that, they don't have a daughter who's in med school who's also in a love triangle with one of her teachers and one of her fellow students.
But there's a bit dash of the telenovela in there as well.
That's
all right. Right, our third show today is Uzumaki, Spiral into Horror. New episodes every Sunday on Channel 4. Here's a clip.
Just the very act of molding clay on a wheel, it's like you're embodying the art of the spiral.
Embodying the art of the spiral? Ah, you're talking about the pottery wheel. Yes, it makes me quite dizzy sometimes, you know.
Yes, exactly. Could I possibly commission a piece from you? One particularly made to give me that dizzy feeling? And would you mind painting the front for me with a nice spiral design? Like this, swirling inward? Yes, I can see it so clearly. A black spiral would be perfect!
What?
The thing is, Mr. Goshima, I find there to be something deeply enigmatic about spirals. In fact, I'm utterly convinced there's a wondrous power inside each and every one of them.
That's Uzumaki, Spiral into Horror, which I assume is animated.
It is animated. And it is based on a really celebrated and unbelievably creepy and terrifying manga written by Junji Ito, I think, in the late 90s. And Uzumaki is a hard sell, but if you are into this kind of weird thing, it is absolutely essential reading, right? I read it during the pandemic, but at a time when I didn't need more existential dread, but life was turning each page increasingly uncomfortable and freaked out by this really weird, horrific story, right? So it's all set in this town in Japan in which spirals are slowly just taking over. And spirals might begin as innocuously as a snail crawling up the wall, which a man becomes fixated on, to then a few pages later, a woman being so freaked out by spirals that she cuts off each of her fingertips because she can't look at them, you know, her fingerprints, right? Mm. So it's a really, it's a very well-known kind of cult Japanese horror manga that has now been turned into a 4-episode anime that is going out on Channel 4 each Sunday in the lead up to Halloween. And it's inspired by a lot of different art sources. Kind of why it is so famous is the artist, Junji Ito, he balanced everything perfectly between having incredibly plain style. Everything is monochromatic, black and white. And it's either extremely plain or it's extremely detailed. And the kind of a confluence of those two things makes it even more weird and creepy. So the story that we hear in the clip there revolves around Suichi's father. He's not given any other name than that, who begins to become obsessed with the spirals. And in the first episode, I think there's like 19 chapters maybe in the manga. They've been condensed, obviously, into only 4 episodes. So 20 odd minutes each, so like they're really turning up
through it,
yeah, yes. Basically. But the story just involves all these townsfolk in this small village, coastal village in Japan, becoming increasingly unhinged as this evil specter takes over. And yeah, that's not everybody's cup of tea by any means, but if you're looking for something as we get into Halloween and the days are getting shorter and the evenings are getting longer and you're looking for something really weird and unsettling to watch while you're doing Wordle this time, this is definitely something to consider, because it's had a kind of checkered path to the screen. It was turned into a live action movie in Japan maybe 20 years ago, and then this anime version of it has been announced mid-pandemic and only just coming to screens now as a dubbed version for the English-speaking audience. So yeah, it's weird, but it's good weird if you like that kind of weird.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Right, so those three shows are Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez Story. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Midnight Family, new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. And Uzumaki, A Spiral into Horror, new episodes every Sunday on Channel 4 on the run-up to Halloween. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.